Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You guys are the greatest. Wherever you get it, iTunes, Stitcher, your Android device, aboutlastnightpodcast.com. We appreciate all the tweets, the emails. You guys are the greatest fans in the world. It's been a crazy week. I am exhausted. Mad TV is, man, it's intense. A lot of work, but it's awesome. You know, it doesn't seem like work. I mean, all the promo stuff that we shot today was, you know, crack of dawn early. But Amir and I got to do a bunch of shit together, and it was really fun. And just the cast is just great. We're just, the more we're around each other, the more we're bonding. And, you know, you want that kind of chemistry on camera. And it's awesome. We start shooting. Well, I'm recording this on Wednesday. Today's episode is dropping on a Thursday. So tomorrow, which is Thursday, because today is Wednesday, but it comes out on Thursday, I will be shooting, I guess, when you listen to this. First day of shooting all the field stuff, and then we shoot on Friday. And then next week, we get into live tapings, baby. And then we premiere in a couple weeks. Holy shit! It's crazy. But it's going to be awesome. The writers have written so much incredible shit, and I just can't wait. So, DVRs, July 26th, CW. Set them, baby. Today's episode, holy shit. Talk about legendary comics and guys who have just dominated the business, not only from a comedic standpoint, but, you know, not everybody gets to have their own show. He had Titus, which was a great sitcom on Fox. He talks about that quite extensively, which gives you maybe the best insight into the business you can get and how the show came to be and how it got pulled from him. He talks very candidly about. He's about to tape his seventh stand-up special. Born with a Defect is the name of the special. And he's just one of the, no joke, most prolific comics. His first special, Norman Rockwell is Bleeding, is in both Brad and I's top five favorite specials of all time. I'm talking about the one and only Christopher Titus. Yeah, baby. You know, a guy that I've never met, but have been a big fan of for a long time. Brad has done many shows with him. They're chums. He hit me up. He's like, Titus wants to do the pod. I was like, dude, yes. From how he got into stand-up to, again, like, the creation and inception of his show, to how he preps for these specials, to being called ahead of his time, like Louis 15 years too early, to meeting Carlin. I mean, the guy just, you could talk to him for hours. We did about an hour and a half, could have probably gone 3 hours. Christopher Titus is one of those guys that just has a real great perspective and opinion about pretty much everything, is super fun and loose to chat with, and it was just awesome. You guys are going to enjoy the hell out of this episode. Please check out his specials. There's so many online. And his seventh special, Born with a Defect, he's taping it this Saturday, July 9th. At the Center Theater in Escondido, California. Tickets are available at ChristopherTitus.com. If you have a chance and you're free Saturday, I can't recommend getting tickets for this special enough. Again, he's just one of the greats, and live is just always better. So the Center Theater in Escondido, California, this Saturday, July 9th, Christopher Titus, Born with a Defect, new stand-up special taping. Get your tickets at ChristopherTitus.com, and you won't be disappointed. Follow Chris on Twitter at Titus Nation. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad at Funny Brad. The podcast at ALN Podcast. At ALN Podcast on Instagram. I'm at Adam Ray 33. Brad is Brad Williams Comic. Mad TV, like I said, July 26th, CW. Ghostbusters comes out next weekend, July 15th. Go see that. Tweet at me. Tell me you saw me. You heard me. Slimer. And of course, this weekend, go see our boy Adam Devine. In Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, baby. Jake Szymanski, if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and check it out. The movie's, it's unbelievable. I hope it crushes, because it was hilarious. One of the best comedies I've seen in a long time. Efron is coming on the podcast. We had to push it back, but it is happening. So do not fret, all the 12-year-old girls inside of you. Oh, God, that didn't sound right. You know what I meant, emotionally. Tour-wise, I'm in town all summer. I got a few dates, headline dates, the Hollywood Improv on July 30th. Get your tickets at AdamRayTV.com. Come see me. Going to headline, do an hour. probably start shaping what hopefully will be my special. That'll be July 30th, Hollywood Improv. Tickets at AdamRayTV.com. AdamRayTV.com for all my in-town tour dates. Laugh Factory Improv Comedy Store. That's where I'm going to be for the next 2 months. Brad Williams is on the road, and you can go see him next weekend in Columbus, Ohio at the Funny Bone, July 14th through the 17th. Get your tickets at FunnyBone.com. Go see Brad. Columbus, Ohio, Funny Bone, July 14th through the 17th. And, of course, when you come to the shows, bring your merch, your ALN merch. You can get it at stoymerchandise.com, ESTOYmerchandise.com. Bring the merch. We'll sign them, the shirts, the mugs, the hats. And we appreciate all that love and support. And I think that's it, baby. So let's get into an amazing episode. Now that we've got the tour dates out of the way, the Twitter handles, the merch info, the Mad TV info, the Ghostbusters info, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Christopher Titus.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
You played the bad guy in this.
Yeah.
You got my part.
Well, for real?
I auditioned for it, yeah.
Which, with the club owner?
Really,
there were a couple of bad guys.
The bad guy who's going to kill him.
Michael McDonald.
That's why.
Yeah, right? Michael McDonald was the one who stabbed him in the leg, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't have to fight Adam Ray right now for
that's all right,
getting your part.
Weirdest entrance, beginning to a podcast ever, or maybe the best.
I didn't want to say. You took my but that's the actor bullshit. You took my part. No, dude, you sucked. I got it. There you go. Let's just be honest. Yeah, hey, you took my role.
No, yeah.
You got the role. I got the role because I was better than you, and that's what happened.
That
I would be okay. I'm like, you know what? Touche. There you go.
Yeah, like I always got frustrated when someone said, "Oh man, you stole my girl." I was like, "Were you dating her?" Yeah. No,
but I liked her. I created a whole relationship in my head, though.
Yeah,
exactly.
You fucked that up.
I mean, I had hypothetical children in my head with this girl, and you just denied me little Rockefeller.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
Really, your name is Rockefeller?
Yeah, dude.
That's what you went with.
It's my dream.
you're about ready to shoot special number 7?
Special number 7, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's this one. Wow. Born with a defect. You know what the weird part is? You start to go, and you ask, comics, I wish people knew how fucked up comics really were. Because at the end of
So you are one of those guys who think on a whole, because there's probably a few that really are kind of normal, or do you think we all somewhat are fucked up?
I even think, okay, so Seinfeld,
yeah.
When Seinfeld was working in Seattle, I heard that he was selling the theater, he did like 4 shows, 2 nights, and between shows, he was going, Seinfeld, this is like 2 years ago, Seinfeld. He was going down the street to the theater where they had filmed that show, and he would watch that show before he went on stage the next show. If you don't think that is a mental illness, you're out of your mind. So, in a good way.
What's the deal with schizophrenia?
In a good way. But like, yeah. I can't watch myself months after I film something. How am I going to watch it the second I film? Right. But then again, he's probably one of the best because
that's why
of that.
He's meticulous.
So yeah.
But that seems over.
We're all damaged. Yeah. I think all comics are. And I've met guys that are just the best guys in the world, and then like down the road, there was one guy that was raping, was doing college gigs and was raping girls. One of the nicest comics on the road,
Pre Cosby.
He was, yeah, Pre Cosby. Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so before it was trendy.
Yeah, no, he's in jail now. He's actually,
I apologize.
I'm not making this up. Vince Champ. He's in jail now.
Really?
He was actually and it's weird because someone told me just recently that his dad was like on the team that caught. They were looking for this guy, and basically they started plotting where these rapes were happening. And I guess someone went to his website and was like, wait a minute.
Oh, my God.
These are matching up completely.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy shit. And his dad was on the team.
Hey, dude, your funny bone run seems to be matching with this rape series.
What are the odds?
Oh, my God.
Well, pretty, yeah.
That, we should at least talk to the guy. Probably make a funny conversation, at least.
All right, well, maybe not all comics go that far, but, I mean, we're all... Something has to be at least a little different in your head to say, I'm going to go up in front of strangers every night, some whom don't want to laugh, and I'm going to make you love me.
I say that's delusional. We're delusional. Yeah. Here's a comedian's mind, like you just said. Mm-hmm. I'm going to walk in stage in front of a room full of strangers, sometimes up to 1,000, and I'm going to be the most charismatic, funniest, badass, lovable person in the room. That's psycho shit. That is.
Yes, it really is. Hearing you say it like that, I was like, God, what's wrong with me?
Dude, you're out of your mind. Really? Is that what you're going to do? Yep. And watch me. And I'll do it tomorrow night. And I'm going to do another show after that.
And come watch me. I'm going to be bad for a while. But come watch that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, but it's a good, and that's why so few people really do it. I wonder how many comics there are. I was talking to my wife about that. She's a comic. So I said, I wonder how many of us there are out there. Is it 100,000 worldwide? Is it is it more than that?
Now, what do you – like how
comic,
much time –
Professional.
Okay, so working like have headline –
guys that have a job doing comedian. Yeah, okay. It's not that many people.
Mm-hmm. And you count maybe, like guys who just do cruise ships.
Maybe 10,000. Sure. Maybe 10,000 worldwide. Maybe. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean,
that's small.
Yeah, there's more pro baseball players if you count minor league players.
And look at your apartment. We live in a nightmare all the time.
Well, all right, I'm going to stop right. This has been Christopher Titus on the About Last Night podcast, our shortest interview in the history of interviews.
You know what I mean, though? It's like we – and I did it for – we struggle, and then boom, we hit something big, and then that lasts. And the one thing I could say to people is that when you hit big to comics – recognize it. You really got to recognize it. I was writing on Titus and acting on it, and I was, you know, working the actors, and I was doing all the press for Fox, and I really didn't take. And my psycho ex-wife was the craziest bitch in the world to hang out with, dude. Oh, I would go home,
watch Love Is Evil special,
dude. If we wrote a script where I had to kiss Cynthia Watchus, who was playing the girl I was with.
Same name even.
Yeah, same name. If I kissed her, my weekend was a fucking nightmare. Oh, you want to fuck her? No. Yeah, you want to? Yeah, I know you do. Oh, I know you do. You wrote it in the script. It's you. I kiss you.
So you want me just to like high five my wife in the show? Just like you want to be like
good game, baby. Ooh, you're so sexy. Good game.
And then you want to be like 1950s, like two separate beds,
sleep in another room.
Yeah.
So you're. I mean, first of all, I can't imagine the amount of. And I've heard Larry David talk about it with Seinfeld, like, but writing and acting and being so. I mean, you were a producer on it too.
Yeah.
So I mean, like you're. That is a skill not. That you should not skip over. I mean, like, for you to do all that, and I remember even seeing you on, like, your press stuff and late-night shows, like, just crushing all aspects of it. So then to have, and not to mention the show being great, and then you to have to deal with that, like, do you just have to find a part of yourself to go, I can't even deal with that because there's so much other shit that...
No, it was work all week and then go home and kiss her ass for 2 days and then go back on Monday. And I used to walk
just to smooth it out.
I'd walk into the writer's room Monday and they go, and Jack Kenny and Brian Hargrove, who are the guys, they taught me how to write sitcoms. They're just the best. They're really great. And I actually, you know, when I got the show, and Bill Burr keeps telling me, stop fucking talking about this. But I had one meeting with the network president, and never take the comedian to the meeting with the network president. You can't have a guy that's been on stage by himself since he was 19 making all the decisions, sit him in a room and go, by the way, now that all those decisions you made on your own got you this successful, we're going to start making your decisions. That's what it felt like to me. And I was like, nope, show's funny. We're kicking ass. We're not doing it. And they were like, okay, thank you. No promotion next week.
And I've heard you tell me this off mic, but you told me that Dharma and Greg killed your sitcom.
Dharma and Greg had actually cheated on each other. Dharma and Greg had okay, so here's what happened.
Yeah.
Dharma, oh man, you're making me tell this again. So Dharma and Greg had cheated on each other. She had cheated with Kevin Sorbo, and there was a love triangle. But the ratings had gone from like a 7 share to a 19 share. Mm-hmm. So we had lost. We were now on our third president in 3 years. That president came into a meeting and goes, I want you to cheat on each other, which we did in episode 4, by the way, 2 years earlier.
It's like, watch the show, dummy.
Exactly. That's what I said. I actually said, so I want you to cheat on each other, have a love triangle, and see that. And I said, and no one, we're at this table. Here's the other mistake. This wasn't a one-on-one meeting or can argue with somebody and nobody knows.
Right.
Here's what a dumbass I am. I got 30 people from the network with me and everybody sitting there in the studio. And I look at the network president and I go, do you even watch the show? Because let me explain how it works to you. And I then talk to her. You look at your eyes, dude.
I mean, yeah, so, that's amazing.
So you're on Mad
though.
TV but now. Here's what I want you to do. Just, yeah, whatever. That's a great idea. You know what? Cheat on each other. Whatever. Sure. We'll work it out. That's what you say from now on. Never don't argue.
Make them seem like a genius.
Yeah. I could. Yeah. Yeah.
You could, but you could. But you know what? I also like.
But I was burnt, though. I was burnt, man. I was burnt. I was like, I was so. We fought the network all the time on stuff. We did an episode where we got my dad to drink again. We had an intervention where we got him to drink again. We had to pitch stuff like that. We did a child molestation episode where my niece had been molested, and me and my brother and my friend go to her school to beat the guy's ass, and it turns out it's one of the teachers, and we take a bat to him in the last scene. So that's the sitcom we were pitching.
This was on network television.
Yes.
And yeah, you can see it. What wow. year?
We filmed it in 99. It didn't get on there until 2000. We did 2002. And that last episode, they actually were so freaked out by it, they waited and aired it in the summer after. Okay. So we did episodes all the time that were, you know, and I just, that's the way I think. I'm like, and like the new movie that we just filmed, I just filmed and produced my own movie, Special
Nice.
Unit. Due to the Fairness and Disabilities Act, the LAPD has to hire 4 handicapped undercover detectives, and I play Nick Nolte's mugshot pretty much. I play the worst cop.
Oh my God.
And Billy Gardell is in it, and Cynthia Walters
Billy.
In the show.
Yep.
Dude, Billy Gardell, and Jackie Flynn too, but Billy Gardell is so over the top, wrong, funny in this.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he plays my police captain who's just a raging psychopath. And Billy's like, I got this, let's do this. And he just, boom, he would just blow up.
Jump
it was
in.
Like, it was like setting a bomb off every time we said action to Billy. Yeah.
You're always at least like between the stuff you talked about on Titus and then the stuff that you're doing on Special Unit,
right.
I always think you're 5 years ahead of what's going to happen because it seems like 5-6 years after Titus, you had like Lucky Louie come along and yeah. and that was kind of diving into some of those topics. And now you're doing essentially a show all about people with disabilities, but
yeah, one of the cops is a quad, Tobias Forrest. You were going to be in it, dude. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We can tell that story. So actually, Peter Farrelly cost Brad a job.
Yeah, so I can say that.
One of the Farrelly brothers.
I'm okay. I'm okay saying that, though, because if anyone's going to cost you a job, if it's a guy that did something about Mary, I'm cool with that.
All right, well, if they do Me, Myself, and Irene, too, it's got to be called Me, Myself, and Brad Williams.
Yeah. And I take out Tony Cox,
yeah.
Dwarf Fight, and then I'm King of the Mountain.
That's what I'm saying.
I like it.
Well, you see, you know Dwarf Trivia. That's great. Tony Cox, yeah. Man, he like popped out.
You they all know
dwarf
each other.
Not right?
I mean,
that's so weird.
They really do.
I would never assume that.
I want to get mad, but it's like, oh, fuck, I know that guy. I can't get mad. We do all know each other. So, well, how did Peter Farrelly cost
so
me a job?
The original story was, it was really a lot more Austin Powers-y, where it was kind of goofy, and the bad guy was this like who's the guy in the wheelchair that talks? The brilliant
Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. Stephen Hawking guy, and he was a mastermind. And he was basically running these drugs so he could buy a bunch of property so he could make it all handicapped accessible. And he was going to make the normal people crazy. My character in that script, I'm tied to a chair, I'm getting my ass beat, and he goes, "That's my plan." And I was like, so you're going to make it more convenient for everybody? That's really not that
ramps?
No, you won't be able to. I said, no, I'll be still faster than you because I have ramps and the doors are opening automatically. You're crazy. And he starts punching me. You know, like I'm, so, and Brad was the bad guy in that. Brad was beating the hell out of
Amazing.
Me in that script.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter Farrelly reads it, and Peter Farrelly is the only guy in Hollywood who really nuts up when it comes to the disabled. All his movies have disabled
yeah,
actors in
some
it.
Way, shape, or form, yeah.
And so it was a weird thing. Michael Ronan, who's in it, Michael Ronan, very funny comedian, he's got CP. He got the – Michael's relentless. Michael's one of these guys that will not stop. He's like, I will be famous or I will kill people on the way. He's that guy. So he gets – so through Jackie Flynn, he gets – Peter Farrelly watches the pilot we did in 06 for Comedy Central, and I'm just in my house one day, and it says – my phone just goes, Peter Farrelly here, and I drop my phone on the counter, and my wife's like, she goes, what? I go, Peter Farrelly's on the phone. And she goes, he can't hear you. I was like, holy shit, why is Peter Farrelly?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know Peter Farrelly, so – I said, yeah, and he goes, hey, I just watched this pilot. Are you doing – I heard you're doing a movie this, and I said, yeah, and he said, do me a favor. Send me the script. Let me read it, because someone's going to get this right, and he goes, you seem to be closest to it. So I said, okay. So I sent him the script knowing that Peter Farrelly's going to love my
That's
script.
That's insane.
And I sent it to Peter Farrelly, and I'm waiting, and he calls me, sorry, man, he's such a nice guy, and he goes, sorry, it took me a couple weeks. He goes, hey, I'd like to give you some notes. Great script. Can I give you some notes? I said, yeah. So I'm in Denver. I'm working Comedy Works,
mm-hmm.
And I get a phone call. He goes, hey, I'm going to call you at 3 o'clock. Cool. So I'm sitting there. No, noon to 3. And I said, cool. So I sit down. I'm like, Peter Farrelly. He calls me. He goes, great script. I go, good. He goes, page 1. And he fucking just starts. Peter Farrelly blowtorches the script for 3 hours. I mean, blowtorches it. I mean, he went page by page.
At what page were you like, okay, I fucking get it, dude. You are a god of comedy, but fucking
like
ease up.
At page 60, I was like, holy shit. I'm like, and it would just get into, okay, 67, fuck. You know, like, it was just, oh, there's 73, no. And then I think he did like 73, and then it went to like 85. I'm like, all right, I got 10
pages. I got 9 pages, all right. Then, I can't do math.
Then he go, hold on, 80, 81. Fuck. Ah. You know? So we get through it, and one of the things he said was, he goes, if you're trying to show the disabled, because you know, Brad's my friend, Mike's my friend. I there's a lot of disabled actors that don't get a shot, and that's why I wrote this, because I know Mike. And he goes, if you're trying to say disabled people, it's one of those. You ever get a note from somebody and you didn't see it, and you all of a sudden two things happen. Number one, you know they're right, and you feel retarded at the same time.
Yep.
He goes, if you think they're normal, why can they only take down disabled criminals? And I went, oh no. I'm totally screwing my own premise.
Yeah.
He goes, don't they have to take down real criminals? And I was like, oh. So I went in after the pile of notes, the nightmare of notes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had to rewrite 78 pages of the script.
And, that's daunting as fuck.
And we had a date. We were literally to like 60 days from shooting. Because here's what will happen, people in Hollywood. Don't wait for anything to happen. If you're listening right now, don't wait. Decide what you're doing. Pick a date you're going to do it and go towards it. And fuck everybody else. And I mean that. Don't wait for them to pat you on the back. Don't wait them up to tell you good job. Don't wait for them to say, you know, we're going to give you the money. Just do it. Like I told everybody, I said, look, February 15, we start filming this. Whether I film it with a skateboard or the GoCam mounted on it as a dolly, we're filming this.
Wow.
So, and I had a little bit, I had a third of the budget from my money. And I got two guys to kick in. They were like, when are you doing this? And I go, what do you think? I go, no, we're definitely shooting it. They go, when? And I said, February 15th. And he's like, do you have enough money? Nope. And they were like, here's a check. That was the weirdest day. I sat in this place called the Havana Room, and these two guys are my investors, and they're great guys. And I had to ask them. They'd already said they were in, right? And I had to ask him for a big chunk of money, and I was like, "Well, we're filming in like 9 days, so okay, money." That's about the with the really attitude I said. Yeah. And they were like, "Oh, hold on!" And I walked out with a chunk of change in my pocket for this movie, and we filmed it, and it's really funny. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but it's the most fun I've ever had. The only thing that is as fun as stand up is doing this movie.
No
well,
kidding.
That and it's like your other projects have been. It's been all your baby. Like you created it. This wasn't someone coming to you with an already finished project being like, all right, can you just do a little dance over here and then you're good? Like, so even if it never gets picked up by anybody, which it will, but even if it never does, you can still sit back and go, I did this.
Yeah, my success, my failure. And it's actually not even my success because I had these two investors and I had the and Billy and Cynthia Watrous jumped in and Jackie Flynn. There's some people that really jumped in and helped. Mm-hmm. It will be my failure, but it will not be my success. If it's successful, it'll be everybody's because it's just – and that's what I've learned being in the business. Someone told me the advice, how do you make it show business work harder than everybody else and be very nice?
Have you always operated from the place of, like you just mentioned, like – setting a date, having that goal in mind, and knowing that like it's happening regardless of what, because that seems like the only way to really get something done. But not everybody has that, you know.
I did the thing called Landmark Forum, and I learned it. Nothing happens with distance time. If you say gonna, here's you, here's gonna. Well, gonna just keeps moving just as you move. Gonna never, you never catch gonna. Well, you never catch one day, but you say, but
which is the sequel to "I'm gonna get you, sucker."
Yeah.
You're never gonna get gonna.
You're never gonna get gonna. But February 15th is fucking coming. It's coming. So when you, and it's weird because I'd said it a couple times over the years. We're doing it, and then one day I got mad because I'd done it. I'd maybe said we're gonna do it like three or four times, and I said nope. And I wrote it down, and I told as many people as I could. So if I failed, it was a real public failure.
Yeah.
And that's weird because that fear – look, my entire career is based on fear and desperation. Entirely. The entire career. And so once I set that goal and it got done, and like you said, no matter what happens, the movie got done. I had made promises to Michael and Ronan, we're doing this movie. You know, they don't get a shot. And people kind of – it's weird being – does this happen to you when you're walking around? Not anymore because you're Brad Williams now, but before you were Brad Williams. When you walk someplace and you're going through the mall and –
People go, excuse me, kid, are you lost? Yeah, yeah, it still happens.
Man, your head is huge. Are you okay? Where's your mommy? Where's your mommy? Jesus.
The beard helps out with that a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why I grew it. But and I wish that was a joke.
Yeah, did some people look away like a lot of times?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's what happened. That's what happened. What I noticed was, and this, the reason the movie got done for two reasons. Number one, it was funny. It was a great premise. And not patting myself on the back, just disabled cops, because it sounds like due to the Fairness and Disabilities Act that we now have to hide with this world we live in. That sounds like totally realistic.
Yes. That literally seems like something you can happen, because it starts with people saying like, and it starts with them saying like, okay, we have to hire two female firefighters. And you're like, okay, so they do the same test as everyone else though, right? Well, no, we make the test a little. No. Don't make the test easier.
I don't want them showing up my house.
No.
Can I check a box for the people that didn't finish the test can't help me?
Yeah. No, that didn't happen. So that sounds like something that could definitely occur, where you have maybe some rights group being like, we have to hire disabled cops. It's like, fuck. Okay, yeah, I guess we do. Give Corky a gun.
I love that. Oh, no. Well, there's been ideas ago. You can't, because there are people protesting. The disabled got together and they protested at Grumman's one day. They got all these people in a bus and all these disabled actors and they came down.
Well, let's be fair. My disabled people are used to riding on buses.
Yeah.
But very smaller. Thing.
You can't way have smaller. A disabled protest. Here's why. Because they get off the bus and the chanting doesn't last very long.
It's also probably like, not very
no
audible.
No justice, no peace. Peace and justice. We want pizza. And like
it just doesn't last. You just, okay, you're back on the bus, everybody.
Oh, God. We tried.
Well, see, here's my thing.
Now, that's a fucked up way to do it. No, that's hilarious.
But my whole thing with giving disabled actors work is it's this double-edged sword where if you don't give any disabled actors work, then it's like, well, where's all the disabled people?
Yeah.
And then if you do, they're like, they're exploiting the disabled people. It's like, well, what is it?
Yeah,
fuck is it?
Well, if you're an actor, you're being exploited. Sorry,
sure.
You're not on the big side of the money anyway.
You're 6'2", white, good-looking guy. You're still being exploited.
And the second you're over, you will be let go. They will not go put him in the home for the people we used to like. That doesn't happen in show business. They just fucking move the fuck on. Next, that's how it works. So, and when you get clear on that, so whether I'm exploiting them or because people in show business we're happy to be exploited. I wish people would get clear about that. Michael Aronin wants to be in this movie more than anything. So here's what happened. What was I talking about before? I'm this dude in this wheelchair going through the mall, through the Topanga Mall one day, and I was watching him, and I was watching everybody turn away from this dude.
Yeah.
And they weren't. And again, I don't think people are mean. I don't think they're evil. I think they don't want people to feel, you know, like kids are just stare at you because kids don't have that. Kids are just
they're just like
no filter.
That's different.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
What's that? And that's why I don't get mad at kids.
Right. So
you can't, because they're just doing like. And the only reason why adults don't do that is because they've seen a little person at some point in their lives. If some dude walked down the street with a third arm coming out of his forehead, I would be like, what the fuck is up with him?
Yeah, dude!
Yeah. Catch!
Do you know that's there?
Exactly.
Yeah, I bet you can juggle like a motherfucker.
Exactly. That's what I would do.
Yeah, but you would say, you would call it whatever. So what I noticed is, so this dude walks up and he's got gloves on, he's rolling his wheelchair, and I just I go, sup, brother? And all this dude did, he looked up, then he looked around, like, and he said, hey, like no one had talked to him.
Wow.
Then I was down in San Diego, this was like last summer, and I'm in San Diego and I'm walking across the street. And there's this woman sitting in a wheelchair. She's got like one leg missing. She's got her bag in her lap, and she's kind of hunched over, and she's just looking down. And I said, how's it going, kid? I just as I walk, she's sitting at that green light. Sure. She wouldn't cross the street. And this woman looked up at me, and she didn't say hello. She said thank you. And I thought, wow, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Like wow. Just that you got acknowledged that you're a human being on the planet. So that's why that was the exact day I said, oh, I'm doing this movie this year or I'm going to die doing it.
I was doing a show last week and there was a guy in a wheelchair. I start making fun of him. And it was literally the story of how I got started in comedy. Everyone's being quiet.
Oh, mate, I made it, stop it.
All you hear is the sound of this guy just laughing hysterically. Same thing. Show's done. He rolls out to me and he's like, dude, thank you for making fun of me. Yeah. I'm sitting in the front row of comedy shows. So many comics just go like, ah, fat guy, black guy, Asian guy. Whoa, not touching that. And it's like, no. Equal.
How are you?
Yeah.
So by not being addressed, it's a bigger. You think that happens
every day?
Every time, like we're doing merch lines at the end, people come by a wheelchair. I go, hey, what's up? What happened to you? Yeah. First thing I ask. And the people behind them, the uprights, will be like, I'm saying uprights.
I love that.
Oh my God. I'm an upright. That might be the most PC, hilarious term.
I call them reachers. You call them uprights.
The uprights. So the uprights are behind this guy, and they're like, oh my God, they're looking at me like I'm crazy. And he goes, and every time, instantly, dude, I was on a motorcycle. Oh man, when I was born, the doctor pulled my head out and snapped my neck. And like, and they something. And they want to tell a story. And a lot of, half the time, they've worked on their stories and they're funny.
Yeah.
So, you know,
the funniest line I ever heard ever was one of these moments. There was a guy in the front row. He had no legs, none. And I just look at him like, hey.
I got when you said no legs, there was none.
Yeah. Okay.
No legs, except for the one stubby.
Did I mention there was no legs?
He had an arm on his forehead that acted like a foot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He would hop on the arm from his forehead.
And the first two comics ignored him, and I look at him, I go, dude, I have to know. Like, was this birth? Was this an accident? Like, what happened? And he goes, I was in a great marriage for 20 years.
Wow, that's a bad way to start a story like that about your legs missing.
Yeah, he goes, I was in a great marriage for 20 years. She cheated on me. We got divorced. Bitch got half of everything. Lost my shit.
That's incredible.
That's the best line I've ever heard.
Yeah. I'm lying on the stage laughing at heart. That's hilarious.
And like, and he drew everyone in with the whole like marriage and love and everything. And we're like, oh well, what? How does this very serious bitch got half of everything?
A Jedi that's master. That's out to you, Jedi
master. That's a perfect line. Yeah, now he comes to every one of my shows, and I point that guy out. Every time Dayton Funny Bone.
And do you tell the story?
Hell yes.
Okay, now, so you stole this one that he had his fucking, you fucking stole his bit. He's doing his bit.
Yeah.
He fucking
God damn it, Pat. He's I hope doing he gets a credit buy.
You worked with Carlos too long, Pat.
Now I want to know if this guy's at like a social setting and nobody asks him, does he bring it up unprovoked just because he's like, yeah, I got this great story now. Like, I can't. Nobody asks. He's sitting there being like, maybe he just
needs. No one's asking me about my closer. How am I getting out of this party? I used to be married. You get bitch got half. Everybody,
nothing.
I told this before. I got to write some new shit.
We've got 15% off sales. Speaking of things being off, let me tell you about this.
Now, is the way you approach making this movie, is that how you do every special too? Where you go, all right, this, like, I want to have another one out by this, so I need to, you know, have...
The special thing, which we're filming, by the way, that's why you guys let me whore myself. We're filming the 7th special in Escondido at the Center Theater this Saturday. Mm-hmm. There's still some tickets left. So Escondido, Center Theater, go to ChristopherTitus.com, you want to get them. I have a tendency... I had an epiphany. I lost my television show, and I had this weird epiphany where I realized I can write. I've got a Writers Guild nomination. I'm a good script writer. But my job is stand-up comedy. Right now, my job is stand-up comedy. And then I started looking around who are my favorites. You know, Carlin. And when you look at Carlin, and I got to meet him when my dad died. We spread my dad's ashes at Caesar's Palace.
Wow.
Like, I'm not kidding. And Carlin was there at night, and I went to the concierge, and I had a TV show on the air at the time. I said, hey, can we get tickets to Carlin? They said, yeah. They sent me right up front, and it was middle of winter. Carlin's up there doing all his new shit. And these skiers were like, ha, 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 very PC. Yeah. And Carlin was ripping. I was hysterical. I was laughing so hard. And at one point, this is when you know, even George Carlin is a comic, because I'm supposed to do 5 more minutes, but I really don't like you people. Good night. And he walked off, and I lost my shit.
Everyone
else is offended. I'm in the big room at Caesars, and I'm just like, ah.
Line.
And I got to meet him backstage. Anyway.
Well, what was that like?
He was nobody backstage, no entourage, just Carlin with a backpack. And he goes, how you doing? And he's really gruff, really gruff. I'm sure every comic, I mean, especially as good as he was and his writing is so good, he met a lot of bad comics, you know, because there's a lot of us out there.
Sure.
And myself included. And he goes, nice to meet you. And I said, I just want you to know I'm a huge fan. Thanks. And you can tell he heard that too much.
Yep.
And he goes, what are you doing here? I go, oh, my dad died, and we brought him, he was a big gambler, so we brought his ashes in, and me and my sister and my brother just put his ashes in our pocket, and we walked to the casino spreading his ashes. And George Carlin goes, that's fucking great.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and so he was a really nice guy. I didn't talk to him long. But he did 14 specials and 21 albums. And nobody's playing. Look how tired. You just finished your second one. Beck just went, oh.
Yeah. I've got two in 2 years. I'm just like, wait, so he continued that pace for
18 months, every 18 months, yeah. And he didn't stop. And I think he took it serious. So after my show got canceled and I did Fifth Annual End of the World Tour, I thought, you know, My divorce happened, actually, and I had written that one, and I'm like, I need to start doing this. This is my job. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Bill Burr and Brad and Louie and like guys that are cranking it out, and I don't think you can crank out shit. You have to really kind of figure it out. But your job as a comedian is to be – look, our job is to look around and notice the bullshit. And if you stop noticing the bullshit, you become the bullshit. Wow. Could someone write that down?
That's unbelievable.
Norman's got it. I need a T-shirt.
That's a T-shirt.
I want a T-shirt.
That's write that down. Now, at what point do you in your career get conditioned to – because I feel like that's one of the greatest things about like – being a comic is like, when people ask me, like, when did you start to like know? I was like, when I just started to see the world and get conditioned to, whether it was through seeing something and having buddies around that had the similar sensibility that I could share that moment in, and just getting used to being like, seeing, finding the funny in situations.
Right.
And that is like such an awesome, like, superpower to have, and why, you know, we can translate it to the stage. But like,
it also hooks us really women way out of our league.
Thank God for that.
Oh, my God. I married her, like, she's a model, and she's so proud of my leg. She's the one who, that's your wife? Wow.
Yeah, but you're a good-looking dude, and then you got that, too. How did you guys meet?
She used to run comedy clubs. When my divorce, my ex-wife had embezzled all this money from us, and she was seeing two other guys, and I had worked for her comedy club, and she was in Shreveport, and I was in Dallas when I found out she was cheating, and I just called her. I said, hey, would you want to come out here on Sunday? We did business, you know. She mm-hmm. just booked. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, I just found out my wife, who I've been with for 15 years, is seeing two other guys. And the joke I do on my act, I have two kids. I stopped at two kids because my ex-wife's vagina was busy elsewhere. It had a guest list, and I wasn't on it.
Fucking great line.
So she came out for dinner on Sunday with a friend of hers, and we had just had dinner. That was all. And then we started talking on the phone, and she moved in with me that next December. You know,
wow.
And by the way, dumbest girl in the world, because she moved in during the worst divorce ever. Like my ex was claiming here's another joke. My ex says to me, I get up and I said, I'm divorced, and she goes, Your Honor, this man has been beating me for 20 years and beating the children since the day they were born. Now let's deal with the first one. If you let me beat you for 20 years, that's not abuse. That's a fetish. So anyway, that's in the show.
But
so,
and then I remember, because I think I met you maybe a week after this had happened. Where?
Oh wow!
I was psycho at the club, man.
And you had
Ontario, right?
Yeah, that was Ontario, and at the Ontario Improv, that's where I met you. And you told me that like the week before, your ex-wife had sent a lawyer out and sat in the front row and started writing stuff down to be like, this is going to be brought up in court.
What?
Love is Evil. I was doing Love is Evil, and Love is Evil came out of basically it was suicide prevention. Writing that special was flat-out suicide prevention. Love
okay.
is Evil.
So you knew when you were going through all this, you're like, I have to – did you cognizant of like I have to talk about this, or is it just like you're like, if I don't do this?
No. I was going to kill myself between shows, and I found out on a Friday at 3:00 between shows that Friday night I was going to kill myself back in the back room of the Dallas of the Addison Improv.
Oh my god!
And
I mean, of all the places to do it,
I know,
not
right?
There, not Addison.
The joke. I actually talk about this. I started looking around for a gun because it's Texas. There's going to be a gun.
At least doing like Carnegie Hall or something.
I know, right? Somebody's good. But I thought, what a thriller story. Titus blew his brains out between shows.
It would have been a great story.
Yeah, especially Friday night. Titus really hated Friday 2nd. He could not stand Friday 2nd.
You know how Steve Martin said he quit comedy because of the Friday Late Show? Titus quit life.
Yeah. Titus said, nope, not
so he
going.
Wins, yeah.
Not
yeah.
in Texas.
No.
So
wow,
and it was weird. I was sitting there, and it's the only time it's really happened. I heard I'm sitting there, and I don't know if it's conditioned because he raised me, but I heard my dad's voice go, "Get off your chair and do your fucking job, pussy." And that's what I heard while I was sitting there. And I got up, and I went. The second show was seating, and I got up, and I was just amped. I said, "Get him excited," and I went on stage. And for the first 10 minutes, all I did was tell them exactly what had happened that day at 3:00, and I was so angry, and I was raging. And the weirdest thing happened about 10 minutes into this rant about my ex and what had just happened. The audience just was like, "Whoa!" They just started going like, because I just went off on her, and then I realized, okay, well, okay, that felt better. I don't want to kill myself now. Then I saw Rachel on that Sunday. I asked her to come out, And then we started talking on the phone every night. I had to, she made me, my ex, man, because of what she said, the court made me move out of the house instantly. Like, this house that I bought with my TV money, it was like, it was gone now. And like, then she gave away all my tools out of my garage. Like, I'm a big car guy. And then everything just got, and it just got worse and worse. And Rachel and I fell in love the next 2 months on the phone. And then she flew out. And this girl, she'd worked comedy for so long. She'd been booking comedy clubs for 6 years. So she was around it for so long that she would give jokes out. She would go, hey, what if you said this? And I was offended for a while. I was like, hey, comedian.
I got this.
Yeah, I've been doing this a while. I'm using that because it's funny, but you can stop now.
Yeah.
No. And one day I just told her, I said, she did this weird rant. She got up one day, and I was in bed, and she was at the dresser, and she goes, I'm at war with my pajamas. And I was like, what? And she went on this weird Maria Bamford thing-esque thing, and I was like, yeah, because I buy them, and they're soft, and I put them in the washer, and they get these little balls on them, and they scratch my skin, then I hate them. I got to put them away, but I feel bad because they were so good to me for so long. And this went on for like 2 minutes, and I'm asleep, and I go, look, stop. You got to write that down. I go, because it's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. And she wrote the show called Pajamas and Other Things I'm at War With. And it was funny. She's got one joke that, like, when she wrote this, just this one, I knew she was going to be a comic. She wrote this joke. She said, I had a friend used to cut herself. When she was naked, she looked like a harshly graded test paper. And I was like, oh, like, that was offensive to me, because I go, you shouldn't be crank. She's an English major. I said, you shouldn't be cranking that. I go, that's funny. So I said, you need to write comedy.
And so by the way, you're one of the kings of, like, taking really fucked up things and making them funny.
Yeah.
So the fact that that made you go like, whoa.
I laughed my ass off. I was like, holy shit, that's a really good joke. And then but here's the thing. As a comic, so what happened was, so she started, she wrote like an hour of material. And she wouldn't get on stage, would not get on stage. And I said, and I have a big problem. If you won't back yourself up, how the hell are you going to back me up? I got a big problem. Like, if you can't do something for you, you're never doing shit for me. So I said, listen, you got to get on stage or we're going to break up. And she's like, yeah, and we had a big monster fight. This is how much I love comedy. Like, I'm willing to literally let you go because you won't do what you say you're going to do. So I went and I entered her at that competition they had at the Ice House for
Uncle Clyde's.
Yeah, Uncle Clyde's. So they had the competition.
Third place is a basket of fries.
I just,
Oh, God.
I still know that.
It's so much like Glengarry Glen Ross. You know what? Third place gets fries. That's what you get, fries. You're going to get fat. You're going to be a loser. So it's like our version. It's the Pasadena version of Glengarry Glen Ross.
Fries. Win it or nothing. Win it or you get fries.
Yeah.
So I entered her in it, and I came home and told her. I said, by the way, I entered you in a comedy competition. And she's like, she flipped out, man. You know, because women, what? Yeah. Ah! And then here's what I knew she had it. We argue about it. She goes, you can't just enter me in something. I got to decide. When is it? And I was like, boom, gotcha. And she came in second. But it's really funny. Yeah, it's really funny.
And that was her first time essentially on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And because she'd been around comedy for 6 years.
You pick up rhythms.
And hung out with like all the – like any headliner came through that Funny Bone.
Yeah.
So she hung out with them, knew them, was funny.
The Shreveport Funny Bone?
Yeah.
The only club I will never go back to. Now it's out of business, so I can say that.
Yeah. The worst – it was the worst
club. Now, had you ever –
You didn't go when she worked there.
No. No. She would have been the only – decent thing there.
I made her quit because they actually wanted her to sign. They go, hey, you can sign the lease papers and then, you know, then you can be part owner of the club. I was like, you're not signing. She goes, I'm not an idiot.
No, not part of that
so
club.
Was it like, I mean, you said, very old school of you, by the way, to like get to know somebody over the phone. Like, that
was great.
That's incredible. I mean, when you described to your children, no, we would talk. So when did you swipe left?
Till the sun came. I didn't. I don't even know what. Go get the cotton gin, and I'll tell you another story.
Do you remember like the contents of the like? Because I'm curious how much of the, you know, putting a band-aid on stuff would you get into? Like, would you have some cathartic talks about the ex and with her, or were you trying to be like off limits? Like, let me just talk about fun stuff.
I didn't care at that point. I had lost my television show. My marriage was in shambles. She was cheating on two other guys. She'd said made them like I had for a while. I had to see my kid with a monitor. I had a dude that was with me all the time. I wrote a sitcom script about it, and again, too edgy for anybody. They're like, hey, this is dark. And
I don't know. Vampires are fucking on HBO right now.
I know, but that's fantasy. It's not real. To me and me.
So stupid.
Yeah, when I told the kids, it was just such a dark time, and she got involved with me at that point just says how hung I really am, frankly, when you think about it.
Because despite all that,
there's no
she's
way
stuck around.
There's no way a woman would have gone through
big dicks.
wow, yeah. Wait, so I want to go back, though, to you mentioned about writing the specials. And at what point did you, as a comedian, start to go, oh, I'm seeing the world a little differently, or like was there a certain bit that you...
Since I was a little kid, I would get, in trouble at school, but the teachers liked me. I would wait till I was in a class clown. I would wait. I didn't want to burn something. I don't want to be the douchebag. Cause the guy that talks all the time is just an idiot.
Yep.
I would wait till the perfect opportunity.
Pick your spots.
And I would go, hey, ba da 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 bang, and the crowd would bah, the whole class would go crowd. I called them the crowd. They were the class, but I called them
Dude,
the crowd.
It's an audience. Come on.
We had a 2 juice box minimum. It was very fun.
Who books that, by the way?
I'll do it. Mr. Hoffman's class? I'll get you a gig. I'll let you do it. Look, you can do a guest set, Mr. Hoffman's class.
Cool. Yeah.
And then, now, is that like third grade and then you move up to sixth grade? If you don't, you just get a box of fries?
Yeah, box
done.
Of fries.
That's okay.
Dad, I got a report card. What is it? Fries. You're out. So then when I was 18, I graduated. My first set ever was at the Senior Follies. And by the way, the year before, I'd fallen into a bonfire. And
Norman Rockwell. One of the greatest specials of all time.
In my top five, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. Norman Rockwell's Bleeding is in one of my top five specials of all time.
Yeah, after this podcast, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's incredible, man.
Fucking A, dude.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. That's nice. Everything else has been shit, but that one has been. So, see, that's a sick part of a comic. That's all I heard.
Come on, man. Take a compliment. It's way funny. It's like, because you still, we saw you take the compliment, but it's funnier to be self-deprecating right afterwards.
And thanks for explaining it. It made it worse.
Oh, my God.
So that one was the ground. I actually threw away probably 2 hours of comedy when I wrote that. That was after I did the forum, and I really got that the shit I was doing was shit. I was doing, you know.
Well, because you were doing...
You ever get up in the morning, your shower's got two settings, Arctic and lava? I'm not kidding. I had a 5 minute bit on waking up in the morning. I had a bit. You ever sneak in when you're a little kid and sneak in your day? I was it makes me make a noise when I hear about the old.
For those who have never seen your show, and it's more like it's solo performance. It's not stand up in the traditional brick
but still
wall
high set, LPMs.
But that's last permanent people. LPMs. Unlike solo performance that can go 5 minutes before there's a joke. You're having every 15
well, that's always bothered
seconds.
Me for a while. You ever seen a comic I'm gonna do a one man show and all of a sudden they do a one man show but they forgot to be funny? It's kind of funny, but it's like, dude, you are a monster stand up. What are you doing now? I'm gonna get dramatic. You can be dramatic.
One man show I feel like should always be funny, right?
Yeah, really. Yeah. But you can do just so what I do now is when I some comics will just bounce all over the place with material, and that's great. Some of those guys are great. I just watched Jim Jeffries' special. That dude is so
phenomenal.
Fucking good.
Yeah,
he's just so
good. I haven't
seen
it yet.
He's so good.
I need to watch
Netflix.
That. Freedom.
He's really good. And I just watch everybody's special, but I always pick a subject. This one's called Born with a Defect. We were all born with a defect because we were all born children. And
mine's a little more obvious. If you want to talk about defects.
Yeah.
So what was your defect? 6'2", blonde, good-looking white guy? What was your defect?
I was born a child.
Oh, okay.
The whole point is that parents treat their kids so nice, and I was raised differently. And because I was always treated as I was defective, I had to fix all those defects. That's kind of the new. But it's all about raising kids, having kids, and why you should never.
Why you should never have kids?
I said, if you're a parent, this show is therapy. If you don't have kids, it is 90 minutes of birth control. At the end, I've had couples come up and go, hey, dude, she wanted a kid. She doesn't want a kid anymore. Thank you. And guys walk out of the... Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Do you feel good about that response?
Fucking totally, man. Yeah. We had too much. We don't have the national resources anyway. Resources we don't have. And you know what? Live a life. I do a bit called the Lamborghini life because it costs $300,000 to have a kid for 13 years.
That's all you need to say, by the way, for me to never have
one. So you know when you get $300,000? A Lamborghini. You know when you get a Lamborghini? Anything you want. You pull up any restaurant or store in a Lamborghini, park it right here. We're going to wipe it down. Get that man a glass of champagne for he has a Lamborghini. If you drive it, seriously, every job interview, wow, you have a Lamborghini? Go talk to the boss. You're obviously management potential. You're going to get a corner office. If you have a Lamborghini, who's sitting next to you? Way out of your league, chick. Yeah. Smoking body. She got money. Got class. She doesn't like you, but you have a Lamborghini. There you go. There's something about you that scored that. If you have a kid, you don't. And you're driving around. I'm doing a bit now, guys. I don't want to do the bit.
No.
It's
okay.
But one of the bits is, you're driving around past parents and minivans with bald tires because Connor needs braces.
That, and it's the exact opposite of when you have a kid. Lambo gets you everything. Kid gets you, all right, corner table, by the kitchen, sit him away, shove him the fuck up.
You know what a Lamborghini doesn't have? A fucking car seat. That's what it doesn't have. Doesn't no room. Have nowhere to mount it. So
unless you're fucking a dwarf. Now, Chris, when you...
he would sit on the console.
Do you... Approaching each special, do you have, like what you just explained, like having a theme or an overall, like, do you sit down and go, this, the amount of material I've written in the past year looks like it's all going towards this, or do you start with, I want to talk about
I usually start with a problem. I usually start with a premise, like Love is Evil was, I wanted to show, and it's never, and like, I didn't want to do My Ex-Wife is a Raging Bitch. I didn't want to do that. That was a big part of it, but I wanted to do Love is Possible no matter how bad it gets. That was a Norman Rockwell. This is going to sound, we're about to make comedy unfunny. You ready? Here we go. So Norman Rockwell's Bleeding is to cause a paradigm shift in the way people saw their screwed up lives, because dysfunctional was a bad word for a long time, and I wrote that in 95.
By the way, when I said you're ahead of your time always, that's a perfect example,
because
now all the shit you talked about in Norman Rockwell's Bleeding is now coming to, like, now it's like, yes, now there's people,
everybody can talk about it. Yeah.
Yes, everyone's allowed to. But then when you were first doing that, it was just like, oh,
some clubs wouldn't book me. And I wasn't, it wasn't like I'm dirty. I wasn't saying this, cunt or nothing. It was just like, he's too angry. He's talking about his mom killing herself, and I don't want to see it. But it's funny.
But it's such a joke.
Funny.
Sure, my mom killed husband.
Killed her husband, yeah.
Yeah, but I made it funny.
Yeah, right. That's the whole thing. So you're right. Actually, Forbes wrote something online. This guy wrote for Forbes, and he said that Titus was doing Louis 15 years before Louis. And Louis, that's no slam on Louis. Louis was a genius.
Yeah.
You know what he got when Louis C.K. just... When Louis C.K. said, fuck it, I'm not going to try anymore, I'm going to do what I want to do, it's a perfect example. That's what I did in 95 with Norman Rockwell. I'm going to do what I want to do, and if you don't want to get on board, okay, I'll see you when I come around again.
How tough is it to make that mindset switch?
Freedom, man. I would tell you this. The moment before is the toughest. The moment before, when you go, God, but if I let it go, and then agents and the business, and they're not going to like me, and what if this? You do that whole thing, and the other side of it is, you're going to die, dude. You're going to be dead.
And you want to die, not trying?
And it's not long from here. No. I'm just going to do what I want to do. I'm no longer going to fit into what they tell me that is good. All right, I'm going to tell you one more story, and then I want to ask about Mad TV, if you don't mind. Can you talk
about
it?
Sure,
yeah. Okay. So here's what happens. So we're in Titus. I get Titus. I got Titus by saying in a meeting, I was like, guys, look, I'm doing the show. And whether you guys want to be part of it or not, but we're going to risk it and do what we can. And I said, thanks. And I walked out of Fox. And my agent goes, you just told them you didn't give a shit if they picked the show up. I said, I don't. I really don't. I said, eventually we'll do it. If I have to film it with a video camera, we'll do something on it. They called us like an hour later and said they bought it for no money too. It was so out of line. People were like, there was so little money they could. And I'd had two big deals before that, and they just gave us nothing. And I was like, no, I want to do it. I don't care about the money.
Right.
So we're in the show. Shows a success. It debuted with a 20 share. It maintained that for a while, and then it dropped to normal. Like
The Walking
shares.
Dead gets a 7.
Yeah, we had
so people know.
Yeah, we did.
You had a 20.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then I pissed off the wrong person, and they were president. And as they say, as Robert Towns said, television is just high school with money. That's all. Show business is just high school with money. That's all it is.
It totally is.
Yeah, and if you piss off the wrong executive, see, the thing is that you're doing something they can't do, or else they would do it. You're writing, you're performing, you're being funny, you're getting laughs, you're getting the accolades, and their job is to make sure that you keep doing that. Doug Herzog is a perfect example. Doug Herzog is one of the best executives on the planet
Comedy Central.
Doug goes, hey, that works, keep doing that, and then he leaves. And then if it goes wrong, he goes, hey, that's not working, fucking fix that. And then he leaves. I mean, and he doesn't think he can he's just a good dude.
It's rare.
Yep. It's for an executive, yeah. So we're doing an episode where my dad had a heart attack, based on a true story. My dad had 4 heart attacks. I took him to the Bahamas because it was a gig down there, and I thought, I'm going to hang out with him in the sun because I don't know how long I'm going to have him. And all he did was sit at the table and gamble. He wouldn't hang out with me. He was just gambling. And at one point, I'm sitting next to him, and I'm going, all right, because I called my wife, and I was like, what the fuck? And she goes, go hang out with him. If he won't do it,
Come to him.
Yeah. So I'm sitting at the table. He loses 2 hands next to me, and my dad goes, you're bad luck. Get the fuck away from me. And I am so not lying. That's honestly happened.
You flew him to the Bahamas.
And I had already done the form, so I burst out laughing, and I went and sat at the table with this other family, and we just were playing $5 hands, and it was a blast. And then my dad shows up, and he's like this look on his face, and I'm like, about 2 hours later, I'm like, what? And he pulls out this wad of money. He'd won $8,500 after I left. I go, wow, fuck, I guess you're right. Because I had the form, so I wasn't like, I didn't.
Yeah.
I said, guess you're right. I was bad luck. Good for you. So we wrote this episode where my dad goes to the Bahamas. We all go to the Bahamas because we don't know how long he has left, and he won't hang out. This he's gambling, and as he's gambling, he starts to have a heart attack. And this is in the script. And his left arm goes numb, and he won't get up. He just won't get up. And I'm like, "You gotta go." He goes, "Not getting. Shut up! I'm running." And he's getting madder and madder. I'm making it worse. And so in the episode, he dies. He falls off this chair and he dies. Mm-hmm. Then we go inside his head, and we're going towards the pearly gates and the white light. And as he gets to heaven, they turn all the lights off, and they won't answer the gates. He's banging on the gates, and they won't answer the gates. Right? That's the and you hear a piano get bumped into, and you hear Jesus, sorry, and you're like we're doing all this shit. We're doing all this shit.
Brilliant.
This
line.
And then all of a sudden, we bring him back from the light, and we're giving him CPR. So we know. When we're sitting after we did the run through, that we know pretty much that the network's going to shit all over this. We know we're done. And the current guy we had at the time, I think he's running like sci-fi or something now. Tony Opticon, that's his name, which is a great James Bond villain name. That's
yeah.
a great
story, you got to be running something.
I would love
you can't just be a Subway artist if you're Tony Opticon.
Welcome to my lab, Mr. Bond. I am Tony Opticon.
Would you like a honey oat tuna or chicken on?
Yeah. So he goes, and we're waiting. We do the run through, and we're just waiting. And I know it's going to be bad. And I'm controlling myself because, again, being a comic by myself, writing and doing what I want for so long, it's hard to sit in a room with a bunch of people telling you can't do what you know is funny.
Yeah.
A bunch of people who have never been on stage before or written a script before. And he goes, I got a question about the whole casino scene. And I'm here it comes. Here we go. It's in the Bahamas, right? And he goes, is Cynthia Watrous going to be wearing a bikini? And I pause and I go, what? And he goes, is she going to be a bikini? Because we want to make sure we go just to the edge of standards and practices. She's so good looking. We'd like to have a really tiny bikini, but we're going to have to look at it to make sure it'll beat standards. I go, is that the note? I go, yeah. I go, wait, you don't care that we just did all this religious imagery, killed one of the main characters, brought him back to life, and then kind of made some Jesus jokes? So is it going to be a big two-piece bikini? And I was like, "Fucking yeah!
All right,
bikini approval is yours, my friend."
Wow!
Sometimes you would do something that was so innocuous, and they would go, "Can't have it. Sorry, don't." Yeah, but it's he just kind of flicks a puppy in the head. Nope, no puppy touching.
No, because I don't like that the puppy has a red collar. I don't get that. Yeah, why is it red?
So it's weird. So
I grew up a blood.
So it doesn't work. If you try to do what they want, it doesn't work. And Louis at one point just walked into John Landgraf's from the story that I heard is he walked in and he said, listen, give me this much money. I'll give you an episode of television every week and no one says anything about what I'm doing. Because he had been through it so many times.
Yeah.
And I think now that's why we film in the movie. It's like I could have probably got someone to kick in some money for the movie, but then I would have had to have changed it. And I couldn't
answer to them and have their input. Yeah. And all that.
I get to succeed or fail on my own. And like the special in Escondido this weekend. My company's filming it, so you know, and it's and we've shot the last two specials, and it's freeing. So when you said, is it hard to make the decision? Yes. But once you make the decision, on the other side of that decision is this lightness and freedom like you can't believe. And I still have I panic. Sometimes I'll be like, oh my God, what am I doing? Holy shit.
Human nature.
You know,
but with any type of big risk, there's a lot of that involved, right?
But even for our own theaters. Like if you go see me on the road at a theater, that's my company did that. It's not it's not Live Nation, AEG. Because I can't see why if I'm putting 1,100 people in a theater, why I'm paying someone 60% of what I brought in.
Who's sitting in an office in Los Angeles or New York.
Yeah, and they're great people. I know those people. They're great people. They just want to do business. But again, I always say this. I know why Prince wrote Slave on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what? You're in this business long enough, and you will have those moments.
Yeah, because
guaranteed you will have those moments where you're like,
because the business will tell you to fuck off one day.
I mean, Chappelle walking away from all that money. I mean, that's just like.
But he also walked away with a lot of money. It's a lot easier to walk away from a lot of money when you're carrying a lot of money. I can't carry any more money, so I'm going to go now. It's a lot easier. I didn't have that. I had my ex-wife's got all the money. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It's a lot sadder story on my end.
I want to say this because you, more than any other comic I've seen on stage, are comfortable and thrive in silences.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not saying you're not funny.
That doesn't sound good, but I understand.
Yes. That's not saying you're not funny. It's you are comfortable making the audience and wanting them as tight as they can possibly go before releasing them with a joke.
Yeah, you like the bit of that happened with Norman Rockwell. I wrote that bit about my mom's suicide, and I knew I knew it was ballsier to take it to that place than it was to not.
Yeah.
You know, because I could have just said, "Mom killed herself. Move it on." Except I just went, "No, let's see how far we can go into this."
And where do you get that from? Comics you look up to that make?
If you look at some of the best, man. I mean, look at some of the. I mean, Pryor would do stuff at moments where he would just take this quiet place, and I think the only sin is to not be compelling. If you're not compelling, if it's silent because you're not funny, but yeah. If you're silent and they're leaning in like, holy shit,
they're with you.
Yeah,
it's and the greatest feeling.
You do that on some of your shit. That last, but I saw your first special. You did it, man.
Yeah, the stuff I did about my dad. For the new special,
yep.
Daddy Issues. There's no way. I learned how to do that kind of comedy from Norman Rockwell's Bleeding. No joke.
Yeah.
Because, and it's gotten to the point where now, if I can get a crowd that's just silent like that, that's almost more thrilling than a huge laugh.
Yeah.
Because you know, oh my God, I have them.
So I want to be clear though.
Yeah.
So I get on stage and for the first 10 minutes I write hard jokes. I want them to be okay. This guy knows his fucking. This guy's got his. This is my.
We bought the right ticket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Fuck this guy. All right.
Yeah.
Then the next 20 they're usually longer stories that are just still the same amount of LPMs.
Yep.
You know. And then they're on a ride now. And then about 2/3 of the way through, there's a moment where the show I've written about is to just smack them, mm-hmm. and it just it's like yanking an emergency brake at the edge of a cliff. So you're still like holy shit. And then you just kind of walk it for a second, and then boom, you got to hit them with another laugh. You can't just leave them there.
No.
That's a sin, man. You just leave it on. Good night, everybody. The fuck was that?
Why am I crying? And then the doctor came in the room and said, "You guys are great. Peace out."
But how'd it feel the first time you pulled that off?
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And the fact that I was able to do that was just like – because you know that they were into you, and you're right. You can't do it right up front because they don't trust you yet.
Yeah,
you have to give them some jokes to make them go like, "Oh, this guy is funny," and maybe do a little edgy stuff so they go, "Okay, this guy can make edgy stuff funny." And then you get them with those little cliffhanger moments where they go silent, and then oh man, it's
a lot of greatest feeling. I think a lot of comics forget too that they're you. I mean, so everything you've experienced, we're all the same machine, man. Yeah. We're all made out of blood, bone, and hair. We've all had the exact same, not exactly the same, but within the same. I mean, all our dads were dicks at one point, or if you didn't have one of your parents was a douche at times.
Yeah.
We all have stories to tell, and as long as you tell the truth, man, that's another thing, dude. You notice that when you're lying, they know.
Oh yeah,
and when you're telling the truth, if they don't know consciously, but they know.
You know. Yeah.
They're like, it just gets quieter. They're just not laughing as hard.
Yeah.
But if you're dead honest, they're like, bah.
Yeah. And it's that honesty that translates.
When they lean in.
Yeah.
That's when they come to every show.
So you said Norman Rockwell was bleeding, and the stuff about your mom.
Norman Rockwell was bleeding. I say,
Baba Walters.
Dude, I'm telling you,
interviews Chris
it's one of those titles.
It's a Mad TV character I'm working on. Right?
I do that too, where I'm just like Norman Rockwell bleeding. Fuck.
It's a lot of W's, a lot of R's.
Yeah, you were on it, Mad TV. Mad TV's come back, and you're on it. How did that go, man? Dude, how many auditions did you have to do to do that?
Oh, man, five?
And two tests? Everybody wanted that show.
Did they?
Yes. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I guess.
Legendary.
Yeah.
Congratulations,
man.
I hate you. Fuck, don't even blame me.
No, but if I told
you
the amount
in the heat.
If I told you the amount of, I mean, just shit that I've gone through in 10 years, like, and gotten and not gotten, I mean, it's, not saying I'm very, but it's just like, I mean, I definitely called my mom and, shed some tears because it was just like I wanted the job really bad because of the amount of sketch I've done. And just I knew it was a great platform to be able to, like, showcase me. And you don't get those opportunities a lot. And sometimes you get you book things and you're like, oh, this will be a cool job. But I'm getting to do one piece of me. And so and also the amount of, like, close calls had just, like – And how many auditions I went through for this, it was like a big, like, and again, even you mentioned, like, this is one thing. This isn't going to be the be-all, end-all. And I, you know, I don't want to say this is going to, like, what defines or whatever is the thing that leads. This could be a one-and-done thing.
You're going to blow up like Jesus, man.
Who knows? Maybe I can afford two Stairmasters after that.
But, two Stairmasters, you're crazy.
But I want to know, you mentioned the stuff about your mom was when you decided to go,
I just want to say congratulations. Dude, when someone gets something like that.
That's real cool.
You know, it's a good dude. Everyone's with someone that's I think I've been that prick for like some years. You know, because I was raised really like, I was started at 17, 18, 19. I was like really young and like all these older guys were like, get away. And I had this chip on my shoulder for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll ask some guys that knew me in San Francisco when I started.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I asked Jake Johansson on my podcast. I go, Jake, I was like, he goes, you were hard to deal with.
When did you let go of that?
And that's saying it nicely.
I let go with it about 8 months ago. Honestly, after my divorce.
I became a nice guy.
Yeah.
It really is. But even that is an easier said than done, like, mental shift of when you I remember first graduating acting school at SC, and like three of my buddies immediately got agents and like movie jobs. And I like couldn't – I was like so like pretend happy for them because it was just like, what the fuck? And then you just get to a point where you're like, I'm not doing myself any favors by not being happy for people. Right. And it's just, it feels way better. And mm-hmm. Also you get to a point where you go, oh cool, Brad and I are going in for different parts. So why am I we're on different paths. Why does he get to be in a Baby Bjorn on a billboard?
Why is Dule Hill getting the getting the crack dealer and I'm the 6'2" white guy who looks like a Nazi?
Yeah.
But, you know, just realizing like different paths you're carving your own
and I got to be happier when I realized that just because someone else gets a job doesn't mean that you like didn't get one. Yeah. And there's room for all of us.
Yeah, so that's what we're getting real kumbaya now, but dude, the world's in perfect harmony. Mm-hmm. If you didn't get that job, it's cuz you didn't get that job. It's not you were supposed to get it and the
someone
universe
took it.
The universe doesn't make mistakes, man. It just doesn't. The universe doesn't make mistakes. And so when you know, like when I got Titus, like honestly, I just didn't, it's not that I didn't care anymore. I just knew that what I was going to do with Titus was going to be what I was going to do. Now, that being said, 3 years into it, that argument with the network president was the dumbest night of my life, dumbest day. I mean, that meeting was the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life.
Did you know it after you...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I knew it the second I said it.
You felt the words coming out. You're like, pull these back.
The joke I did in the special was that, you know, the thermostat lowered itself. I just got cold, man. And then a tumbleweed blew across, and I heard Clint Eastwood's voice. Well, that was fucking stupid. You know, so, I mean, yeah, no, I knew. I knew the second it happened because the room, I honestly did think there was going to be this moment of, yeah, take that, from my people on my side. But they were older and had a little more insight into the business.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, that was horrible what you just did.
So we're going to get a call in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. You've embarrassed the network president in front of everybody.
Yeah.
So, and it wasn't the best idea. Her idea was not a good idea. And the good news is, a couple years later with Paramount, she got fired for being difficult. Boom! There you go. Sorry, I hate to put it in.
Doesn't make mistakes.
It doesn't.
Universe doesn't make mistakes.
What was your favorite part about doing the show?
The writer's room. Robert Hawkins was there. Jim Hope was there.
Wow. Robert Hawkins. Yeah.
And Hawk was the funniest man. You know, we had so many great writers. Patrick Meegan, who started as a writer's assistant, he was a great writer's assistant because he would go, he was so funny. He'd be sitting there, we'd be yelling stuff. Yeah, say this, put this. And then he goes, and he would, and Patrick had this weird thing, like if he heard a joke that wasn't funny, he would just go, do you really want me to write that?
Oh.
And we were like,
so condescending.
And at first, no, he was nice about it. At first, but we were like, put it down. He's like, okay, and put it down. And then we got after about 2 months of work on them, like, do you want to write that? And we'd all stop and go, hold on, wait, no, I don't know.
Reread it.
Yeah.
There's a better joke here.
But the writer's room was the most fun place we've ever been. And working with Stacey Keach, we got, you know, David Carradine came on the show, and we had great. And Keach was this dude, man. It was like playing ball. It's like, hey, it's like doing a pickup game with Jordan. You know, and you're like, you're just you, but because everything that's happening is exactly to you, you're just, I'm the best player ever, and that's how that's
Stacey Keach was. It took me, because I didn't really know who he was based on my age. Like, I didn't really know who Stacey Keach was before
Mike Miller.
And then after that, it took me a while before I stopped looking at Stacey Keach as your dad, as that character.
Yeah,
because he played it just so fucking well.
He's getting cast as it too. We showed him so well. Like, he did this show that just got it was actually, he was really funny on it. Families or whatever, some ever word that some lame sitcom name, you know, and he was on it, and he did 12 episodes like that, and it was people kept calling me, go, your dad's on another show now.
Still working.
Like, it's
would cute. You have the writers meet your father to really?
They did.
To
they came down. Yeah, they came down. The first, my dad came down.
How did he take that? Because I know
he was pissed, man. He was pissed because I'd already been doing Norman Rockwell for a couple years, and he came to the show a couple times, and he was just like, you know, I don't remember these stories the way you remember them. And I'm like, yeah, well, okay. You were drinking a lot.
Yeah. And if I told them your way, they probably wouldn't be giving me checks as big as this. So
no, if I told him his way, he was perfect. He was the dad.
Okay. But
so he comes down to the film that we filmed the pilot, and Keach was really funny, but Keach kind of had this surface level sitcom dad thing he was doing. Mm-hmm. And him and my dad went out. They just disappeared. Like, we were on the set, and we're filming the pilot, and all of a sudden – like, anyone seen Stacy? And I'm like, no, where the fuck's my dad at? They were gone for like 6 hours, and they came back kind of lit up a little bit, and Stacy just goes, looks at me and goes, I got it.
So I don't know where they went or what they did, but when they came back, Stacy had spent enough time with my dad and had a couple with my dad that it was – and he nailed it. He had the edge that my dad had. But my dad swore to God – my dad swore to God. We interviewed him. Extra was there. We're filming the pilot, and Extra's interviewing us just in case it goes.
And my dad says this. It's on, I actually have it on Norman Rockwell's Bleeding. He says, and I never abused those kids, and if I did, they deserved it. He says it in an interview. He's not joking. He's dead serious. It was
something
more testimony.
Something to be broadcast to the – yeah. Like, wait, no, but that's true.
Yeah,
and
right.
Now, with all the stuff that you write about your family, because you're obviously a very personal comic, like, has there ever been a moment where either Rachel or your kids, have they ever vetoed a joke?
You know, there's a joke I'm doing right now, a bit about my aunt right now, that is just, it's mean, it's honest, but it's kind of mean, man, and it gets such a big look, but it's mean, and when she sees it, there's going to be an empty space at Thanksgiving.
I was just but you're going full-fledged ahead, you're just like, this is a great bit.
I bought her 2 cars, I bought this joke.
Okay, you know what, that's your argument right
Get
there.
Get your own stuffing.
If these jokes pay for those cars, I'm fine with it. I think you have to be honest, man, and this new show, like Norman Rock was all about me being a kid. Well, Born with a Defect is about me having kids and why you shouldn't. It's weird. I've had people come to me during this touring just going, dude, like, I grew up with you. Like, I was like 20 when I started watching your stuff. Now I got a kid and I got a wife, and you're talking about kids. It's crazy. So yeah. through their first divorce and all that kind of stuff.
And then with, like, fifth annual End of the World tour, that was like right after 9/11, and explaining 9/11 to your kids.
I had a kid 16 days before 9/11. Yeah, so I was holding her when the towers went. I'm like, holy shit! Wow, I just had a baby, and the planet's burning down. This is great. And remember, that had my trip to Iraq on it. Had Terry Schiavo, the bit called Kill Titus. That's a great special, man. It's got pedophile crucifixions on it, which got me into some trouble.
You're crucifying pedophiles. No, who has a problem with that?
It was pedophiles.
Yeah. Well, there's a
stupid
new bit.
Question.
There's a new bit in the new show where my daughter, we were watching the riots on TV. And this joke, man, you ever notice how an audience, you'll say something that you don't mean, but their PC thing kicks in, and the joke is, and my daughter and I were watching the news, and we're watching it was a Ferguson thing. No, it was a Baltimore thing. No, it's a North Carolina thing. Sorry, wait, Florida. No, it was a Texas thing. I don't. All I remember is some black people were getting soul raped by bullets. That's all I remember.
I mean,
again. So
It's spot on.
So the audience would be like, oh, and I'll be like, oh, has anyone read the paper in the last year and a half?
Yeah. Did those things not happen?
Yeah.
Google the internet.
Yeah. So that bit, that pedophile crucifixion, was like this bit about teaching my daughter about racism, because my daughter in the middle of the riots goes, why are black people so angry? Because she's a little privileged white girl. And we had an hour and a half long conversation about the history of why black people are so angry. And because we did that.
Yeah.
we kind of. So it's a long bit, and when you first wrote it, it's one of those bits when I first write it, it is so uncomfortable. The entire audience is just like, no. Well, no, but pedophile crucifixion was when the Catholic Church was raping a lot of little kids, and my whole point was, you always got to find a way into a bit. The point was that there's good priests.
Yeah.
There's good priests. So the bit is, this good priest takes over a bad parish, and on this first day, he's got the bad priest nailed on the cross behind him. And he's doing his first service, and it's hilarious. Except I'm doing it in Pittsburgh one day, and I got the bit to his final. We're about a month away from filming the special. I'm in Pittsburgh, and this dude is sitting right in front of me, and Brad knows this. Whole audience can be laughing. Don't notice one of them. One dude's not laughing. Dude, I'm fucking lasered. You know this too.
Yes.
You laser on that dude. Don't know why.
What is wrong with you?
That's our signal. Yeah. Why aren't you laughing? Everyone else, what's wrong? And this dude's sitting right in front of me on this riser, and he's got his arms crossed, and he's shaking his head. And I go, and I should have just moved on. And I said, dude, what's your problem? And he goes, my son is a Catholic priest. And I said,
oh boy.
Is he one of the rapey ones?
Oh my God.
And the audience.
Fair question.
They lost it. Yeah, they lost their shit. And then he flipped me off, and he goes, F you, and he walks out of the club. And I said, aren't you supposed to turn the other cheek? And it was a Midwest chain club, and I had a meeting with the manager that night, and I was told where the line was.
All right.
I guess.
I mean, and still, that's one of those things where, even when that happens, you can make the argument, but like, yeah, boss, but 99% of them were laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you someone who thinks you can joke about anything? Like, nothing is off limits?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I think there's two kinds of edge. There's really dirty, like really cunt and blah blah, anal rape. There's that kind of
edge. Okay, well, I'm still working on that bit, but it's
but you know what I mean? There's a lot of guys that do that, and they consider themselves edgy. And then there's like the racism bit I consider edgy. Some of the brats have talked about, you know, Brad being who he is, the size he is, and dealing with that. I mean, some people don't want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and to make those things funny, that I think that's when you're doing good work, man. That's when you're doing good. Like,
yeah.
Carlin was like that. Carlin would go into, do you see that bit he did on his last special about deleting people after they die out of his phone?
What?
It's like the darkest thing. He goes, you get 2 weeks and fuck you. He goes, you're in my phone for 2 weeks after you're dead, then delete. He's talking about death. He's talking about death through deleting his contacts in his phone. And I'm like, I hated him. I'm like, Carlin would make every special I watch, Carlin, you know when you see someone great and you're like, God, fuck.
Yeah.
I am never going to be that, ever.
What advice do you have for somebody like me who's putting together like what is going to be like my first hour? And I feel like it's very – like right now my comedy is very – I'm starting to tackle more stuff that is personal. But right now it's real fun and positive. But I have a lot of like family shit that I want to get into so bad. For example, my sister's husband is a white rapper. And not anymore, really. He does shows like once every couple months.
Yeah.
But there's so much shit that I just talk about that has already happened that part of me goes, let their marriage go longer than 2 years before I talk about it publicly on TV so that maybe they're solid enough to be able to handle that. I mean, shit, with my stepmom, like there's just so much. And I go, for sure, I think in the second special, I would get into it because I would be like, well, now
what would you tell them that? Because you didn't used to always – you didn't always used to talk about what you talk about.
No. You know what? Well, like for me, I feel
everything is
a little different because for me, I had to get the audience comfortable with dwarfism first. And then it's like, okay, oh, you're good.
They're never comfortable.
You know.
It's like,
oh, really?
It's like getting comfortable with spiders. Never really – I'll be okay.
I'll listen
but
to them
never,
talk about their lives. Don't fucking bite me.
It's never really going to be okay.
I don't want to hear a spider talk about racism.
But I mean, but I like that you've like, I get uncomfortable. No, we're just nice.
Yeah. Those aren't normal shoes. So,
well, honestly, I just had to learn how. And because like I tried to do bits about my dad going through cancer while he was going through cancer, and I it was too close.
Sometimes you can be too connected,
I couldn't do it yet.
Like, I just started talking about working at a grocery store in high school like 6 months ago, and there's now probably a whole hour on it because of the stories. And it's just speaking of what you guys are talking about, like there's a story that I tell about, you know, a kid with Down syndrome who was a grocery bagger there, and it's like the first story I've told where it gets like, man, low and quiet and like people even just like awing and then come in with a big punch. But it's like even that stuff, I'm just – everything I talk about is based in reality, but it's – there's just so much deeper shit that I can't bring myself to –
So, you know, there's the thing. So I did the.
I also don't want to talk about it right now.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I went to the Landmark Forum. Landmark Forum kind of it's something in Landmark Forum. It's just a 3-day course, and they clear all your past. Like you talk about. It's not. I don't mean clear going clear. I mean like you talk about the shit in your life, and they put it into a context. Like what happened to you is a story you made up. Like what happened. Your dad got cancer. Mm-hmm. What you made that mean, you made up. You know, there's no truth except the truth you believe. Now, you can choose an ugly truth or you can choose a pure truth. You know, my ex-wife cheating on me, I could say, well, she was – I'm a loser. I'm horrible. I was – you know, and she – or I could say, without her cheating on me, I never would have met the best woman in my life. Two totally opposite stories, same incident. So what we make things mean is really important. So like my mom, I could never have talked about my mom's mental illness before this. I really got that my mom didn't hate me in the forum. I got that she was fucking crazy. She was just crazy. That's it. That's it. Bottom line. Mm-hmm. My dad didn't hate my guts. He actually loved me because if you hate somebody, you're fucking not up their ass all the time. You just leave them alone.
Yep.
My dad was always, what are you doing? You're an idiot. Stop it. And that's just the way he did it.
Yeah.
So I started hearing my dad differently from that day forward. So what happened was now when something horrible happens, I just change my story about it, and that's how I write the comedy. So once you change just like all the stuff that you say you don't want to talk about,
because
there's a darkness to it. There's something that means something to you. Mm-hmm. Well, you made that meaning up.
Yeah.
You know, now it's hard. That's hard.
There also is a thing where I'm like, oh, I'm not so sure that my stepmom wouldn't fucking do something banana shit crazy if she heard all these like real honest things about how I feel about her. And also, I care about my dad.
She's gonna die soon too. listen, exactly. Look, you want to buy a car, man. There's a house. You need a house. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, my dad hated all the stories I told. Then one day he came to me and he said, "I didn't know you saw it like that." And then we did Titus, and he was really upset because every episode of Titus.
Yeah.
Well, one day he's in. It was like, remember that old store Mervyn's? They had a Mervyn's here. Mervyn's before they closed, and he gives his ID to the lady, and the lady goes, "Ken Titus?" And he goes, "Like the show Titus?" He goes, "Oh yeah, it's my god." And he just goes off on me. "That's my stupid son. Yeah, just making fun of me. Blah blah." And she goes, "Would you wait here for a second?" And he says, "Yeah." So she disappears. She comes back with two guys from the stock room. Mm-hmm. And they just flip out on my dad. They go, "Without dads like you, man, we would be in jail right now." He goes, "I almost, because my dad beat my ass, that's why I'm working here now instead of in prison. Thank you so much for being a kind of father that we need more of." And these are like 21-year-old kids.
Wow.
And my dad was like, he never got it. So here's the thing. When you write the bit about your stepmom, you can't write it through hating
her. No.
You have to write it through a different – you have to go a different way in and write it – from you, maybe figuring out why your dad loves her. Maybe that's why. And then starting to come up with reasons why he loves her. And the reasons can be really funny. But like you have to – and you can still say what you want to say. But you're doing it to this weird way where she really can't jam you up anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely am thankful. You know, the relationship I have with my mom and how what she's been in my life probably wouldn't be there without my dad cheating with this woman. One thing I do feel like – I also go
– See, you're talking about it with no pain at all.
My one bummer is that he didn't cheat with somebody more like Martha Stewart, like somebody that really had something to bring to the table and not just like some added bonuses. But
just not fishnet stocking. Right? Yeah. You had a skill. I'd have been dead. You know what? If she could fix a car, install stereos,
she could even do
a window tint, something.
I mean, at least update websites because I can really use that right now.
Yeah. She could cheat
with a skill.
Yeah.
Do that at least.
A lot of guys don't, though, man. Pussy's powerful.
Yeah.
Powerful.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So with this...
next special?
Yes.
Yeah.
Those words. How did you pick where you're shooting it in Escondido?
We filmed a Neverlution there, and it was one of the best specials. It's this perfect little theater. It's 400 seats, mm-hmm. but it's got two tiers, and it's really tight on you. And it looks like – look at the pictures of it. It's really – like it's beautiful. It's like modern classic, and it's tight. And the problem is I think sometimes big comedy doesn't translate well on TV.
Yeah.
Like if you can watch, if you got 2,500 seats, and I played, like I toured with Kenny Loggins, I toured with some people where it was 16,000 people, and it's just weird. You know, I did Gator Ground once, 85,000 people. It's the weirdest show I've ever done.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Gainesville, Florida, right?
Yeah.
How do you even
University of Florida.
I mean,
not only that, but the game's the next day, so they won't let people on the field. So you're standing at the end of the stadium, and it's just 85,000 people around, and you do a joke, blah, 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 and you'd go,
doesn't even sound like laughter.
It comes back.
It would come back, and then next joke. I did like 14 minutes, six jokes. It was great. It was like it would just take so long for the laugh to stop that you would just wait. Yeah.
Is that even enjoyable?
No, at all. No. Money with the check went. Yeah. Check cleared.
Sure.
Check cleared. No, that's why I picked it. I want the audience to have a good time. And this theater, man, we're doing two shows, and it's only 400 seats, and it's just a kick ass. It's one of those theaters that when you're on the stage, you know those rooms where it's just rocking you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like as long as you're doing your job.
Oh yeah.
It's like it's just rumbling your guts a little bit.
Are you big on having an intimate vibe? Because you connect really well with your audience, so I feel like being able, do you like to be able to see like a couple rows?
No, I don't care about that. You know, okay. Carlin, if you look at Carlin's special, it's funny. I hate working with directors. Another reason I took over my own comedy production is because they'd go, "Now we're getting a jib, and then we're gonna have a dolly, and the guy's gonna whip it across. There'll be a guy standing behind you in a Mum and Sean's outfit. He's gonna look like a mime, and he's gonna film the audience while you're doing." And I'm like, "What? Why are we doing that?" And they go, "Oh, it'd be great." Because
we did it before.
But but there's a guy with a camera behind me roaming the stage. Do you know how easy it is to fuck up comedy? Like you're gonna have a dude roaming the stage while I'm.
And it's never been done. Like it's just like okay. And then as I'm telling this very serious moment, this guy in an all black suit is going to walk a camera up next to my face, the audience is going to be like, "No, we don't see that guy."
Or there's a dolly track in front of the front row that as you do that, we're gonna do a slow pan. Are you gonna pan during comedy like a staccato comedy goes? Comedy's not.
Yeah,
it doesn't do that. So I kicked him like we did Neverlution. New Wave Entertainment did it, and I have to say it's one of the best looking specials. It looks so good. But before that special, my manager comes up to me. He has the guy with the camera, and he goes, "And this is why I'm an asshole. This is why I'm not beloved." and I'm aware of that.
Doesn't matter. You got a huge dick.
Yeah, there you go. And so what happens is that the guy's on the with the camera, and I go, "If that guy's on this stage when that audience is seated, you're going to have to send them home because I won't be walking on this stage.
Whoa.
And he's like, I go, Carlin. And here's what saved my ass. I go, Carlin. I go, watch every one of Carlin's specials. Two center cameras, left, right, no audience shots. I don't need you. I don't listen. If I need an audience shot of them laughing to prove that I'm funny, I have fucked up my job. I am not qualified to do this.
Yeah.
So if you look at Carlin's special, it's just center, left, right, center, left, right, center, left, right, and it's got a rhythm to it. And every time I see a big jib shot where it's really pretty and the camera's slowly moving, what are you fucking Celine Dion? What are you doing with comedy?
Some people think they are.
I do not mean though. I mean, and I'm such a purist.
You're exactly right, though. I never see those shots and go, hilarious.
Yeah. Exactly. Funniest jib move I've ever seen.
Yeah. And as someone who has a jib in their special, there's definitely some ego involved in those shots.
Of course.
Because you want to be like, look how many people are here just for me, but that's all it is.
Thank you for flat out admitting that.
That's all it is.
Because I know, because we actually had we had the meeting for the special today. Yeah. We had the production meeting, and I go, guys, and I did this. I go, do me a favor before the show starts. I want you guys to plant a camera on the stage, and we'll use a time lapse, and I want you to just take a picture. So they're basically gonna have a time lapse of the place filling up. Because I'm the same as you. All right, man, good.
Good to know your inner monologue voice sounds like a Harry Potter villain. Look at me, how great I am.
Sure. Look how many people came to see me.
I mean, pretty much every dwarf inner monologue is some fantasy.
This is where I have him here. I did not know that.
Yeah. And there's a certain amount of that. You want it to look
professional. Larry the Cable Guy did his special in a football stadium.
Yeah.
Was that the best?
Did he really?
Yes, in a football stadium. Kevin Hart's new film is in a baseball stadium. Jesus Christ. It's nuts. Like, is that the best venue for comedy? No. It absolutely is not. But your dick gets hard when you look out and see a football stadium and go, lot of people.
Comedy rock star shit.
Bought my ticket.
A few more things. You got about 10 more minutes. Are you good?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm talking way too much.
No, this is incredible. And you're this is great.
Insightful, inventive. Go ahead.
You are.
I'm just trying to give you more words.
I mean, it's easier said than done to be very articulate about this.
I do want to ask you one thing. You do a segment on your podcast called the Armageddon Update.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with Kardashians, election, Zika virus, where are we?
We're on the edge. I'm hoping for an extinction level event. Honest to God, I think we could take out 6 billion of us and we'd still be fine. And
so you're going Morgan Freeman Deep Impact.
And
kind of shit.
We'd set up some gigs too instantly. If we survive, we'd be like, hey guys, you know what? There's some rubble. Why don't we set up a light and a mic at the rubble? And I've got,
we'll call the club
battery.
The Rubble.
We'll call it the Rubble. Did you guys get a spot at the Rubble?
Who books that?
Got to sign up a long time earlier. Fucking zombies are way getting spots. So I just think we have this weird, how did we get here? That we have this mobster 4-year-old who, and I mean the hands of a 4-year-old, he's a tiny man. And he just babbles shit and he keeps getting more popular. It really reminds me, and this is going to sound, I'm not comparing it, I'm just saying Germany in the 40s where people just... And I don't know if people are mad because the economies, but I don't understand what happened. Does people remember what 2009 was? Because it was fucking a nightmare. I'm so glad Ted Cruz quit because the last four guys, Cruz, because you just watched Ted Cruz walk the earth going, no one's ever going to wipe a booger on me again. No one's ever going to wipe a booger on me again. Didn't he just look like that guy?
I'll show them one day.
That's the first president going to shoot up an office building. That's what he looks like. And then you got Hillary, who's just got this wake of bodies behind her, allegedly wake of bodies. I don't want to die in a single one car accident. Just an odd where they find trunk fibers on my shirt and a suicide note written in a language I don't speak.
Yeah.
Allegedly, I said.
Yeah, allegedly.
And
yeah,
Bernie, well, and I don't know what Bernie's doing, but Bernie's just this kind of lovable yet grumpy model train enthusiast.
I love how he's never said anything about trains, but when you say that, you're like, perfect.
He knows everything about them.
Yeah, he's got an engineer's cap somewhere in his basement.
Puts it on before he goes to bed.
That's right. And if he's in White House, you get to see him in the basement, just doot-doot. Vladimir Putin's on the phone. I told you when I'm playing with my trains. I will not be bothered.
Choo-choo, Bernie. Yeah.
I think this election by far is the weirdest I've seen in my lifetime, and I've been around a while.
Now, by weird, do you mean scariest?
Scariest, because that dude could win. And I think his ego I don't want a crazy guy who says crazy shit. I want a guy who's calm and measured and goes, I'm running the most powerful country in the world. You know, let's take a step back.
Let me have some meetings.
Let's do it fast, but let's have some meetings against the best guys, the smartest guys we know. Not a guy who's going, I'm telling you, it's going to be perfect.
Yeah.
No. Good. You're going to love it. It is so good. It is going to be the best ever. What are you going to do? Don't you worry. It's going to be good.
Oh,
really?
And by the way, my dick is huge.
Yeah. Tiny hands, big dick. There you go.
Yeah. I got great words. Too. None of this shit really matters. What
I got
saying.
A good brain. He said that. I use great words and I got a good brain.
Oh my God.
Not a great brain. I got a good brain. He said a good brain.
You know.
That's something the Down syndrome bagger at my grocery store.
What do you guys
think
about it? What do you guys say?
As a comedian, I'm just kind of like, wow. I didn't need that much material.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need to write 3 specials this year. I'm good.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I feel like some really awful shit will happen if he wins. As far as like,
I think worldwide, I think it's gonna set off something. I think
I also feel like you will get assassinated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone told me.
Now I know you have to tread lightly on that topic.
Yeah, because it's a panel thing. I made a prediction that he's going to quit because remember that? So funny. It's really funny to me that there was an assassination attempt. That kid tried to pull that cop's gun and shoot him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was.
That's actually what gave me more.
I said, that Muslim kid. Oh, wait. It was a white kid from the suburbs who was like, fuck this dude.
<You're> like, come on, Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler. Brandon, don't do it. Shut up, Tyler. We're doing it.
Did you bring my Chemical Romance hat? All right, hell yeah. When I have that on, I feel more confident.
Yeah. We're both going to wear our anarchy shirts, right? That's what we believe in.
Brad also wrote down here that Dana Carvey's a big...
Big influence, yeah.
How did that come to play?
I don't know. I tell you why. Because when I started, Cosby was my original influence, pre-rapey Cosby.
Mm-hmm. And you have to say that now.
Yeah, you do. You really do. Because it's such a weird thing.
Bummer. It'd be weird if you go, Cosby was a huge influence on me, post-rapey Cosby. Wait, what?
Didn't like him until he got edgy. When he was roofie and bitches, then I was all up in Cosby's business.
His special himself, okay. Right, but then the most recent stuff.
Have you seen a new shit? Oh, like Hicks, crazy. I roofied the girl. Okay, I did. I hacked it up. I pulled the hack ripcord.
Everybody loves a Cosby impression.
So Cosby, and then prior, when I watched the Long Beach special, man, Long Beach special was like this amazingly... Cosby, I mean, Pryor talked about shit that you can't even imagine. And as a kid, I didn't get it. I checked that album out. Actually, my library at my eighth grade let me check one of those albums out.
That N-word's crazy?
Yeah. And I was in my room listening to it, and my dad comes home, what the fuck are you doing? He's like yelling at me. I go, who gave you a Pryor album? And I go... The library let me check it out. And my dad went, oh, okay.
The library did it.
It met the weird test of, you know, someone with more education than me let you have it.
Yeah.
And then Robin, Reality What a Concept came out. And Robin, that was when I realized, okay, I always wanted to be a comedian. Then when that came out, I'm like, I'm doing comedy. This guy cracked open a new toy box. And then
for me, it was,
how so? You just saw
Live at the Met. I'm like, God, that
Live at the
that,
Met, yeah.
That's, like, what about Robin versus somebody would
well, Live
just...
at the Met, there's like Live at the Met, like that whole thing he does at the end with his kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see why influence in you can see at the end of Fifth Annual of the World Tour.
Yeah.
You know, now I did it differently because it was what my daughter did, but mm-hmm. Live at the Met was great. What would you say?
What about Robin did you see when you were like, okay, this is happening?
I couldn't believe it. He was doing 15 different characters in 15 seconds, and he was smart. He's doing a Shakespeare thing, and I remember it made me want to learn more. Because I didn't get some of the jokes. It made me want to understand. He was so smart. You could tell he was so smart.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't get it, so it made me want to learn more. And then so I started comedy. So when I was 14 years old, my dad was in this organization called Parents Without Partners, and he had dated this girl named Darlene, and they did what they did for a while, and then she dated this other guy, and this other guy was a comedian. He was in the San Francisco Comedy Competition. I was 14. And they said, hey, we got an extra ticket. I know Chris likes comedy. Does he want to go with us? Mm-hmm. And I got to see in this steak restaurant Carvey, Marshall Warfield, all these guys in mm-hmm. the semifinals of the San Francisco Comedy at 14. And I was that was it. I'm done. I'm done. I'm in. Wow. So then when I started comedy, I got to open for Dana about 6 times.
Yeah.
And I've never, to this day, never worked with a comic that I can sit and watch every show, do the same shit. Mm-hmm. And he taught me, and I would ask him all these questions. And, you know, he taught me comics. How do you keep it fresh? And Dana taught me years ago. He said you have to learn how to tell the same story again for the first time. And it took me 4 weeks to figure out what that sentence meant, but I got it. But he's right. And then and he always has fun. Dana said, you know, I always approach being on stage like I am, like. I'm in ninth grade, and the teacher's left the class. And he's that dude.
Okay.
So doing something a little wrong,
yeah,
and also being really funny. And I watched him tell stories. Dana Carvey would tell stories, do the characters in the story. I think probably for a couple of years I tried to be Dana. Who did you try to be for a while? Did you try to be Carlos for a while when you started?
Yeah, for a bit. Yeah. And then tried
glad
to be him.
You stopped there.
Tried to be you.
Did you?
And then tried to be Robin. But no one could be Robin.
No one could be Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I watch your last special. When I see your stories, I'm like, good. Fuck yeah, Brad. Keep going. Yeah.
There you go.
Keep Thank being you, me.
Keep being me.
No, but really, man, it's all storytelling, man. I think at the end of the day, the best comics are storytellers. There's great joke writers, but joke writers, you never remember them. I have people come up to me and go, dude, did you tell that? I have people all the time. Here's the bonus. Mm-hmm. If you do it well, you tell the truth. Eventually, people come up to me and go, I want it. They don't say you're funny. That's a gimme. They walk up and they go, I want to tell you about my dad. And they start talking about their family. Love is evil, man. Love is evil. Without doing it, God, I hate telling them. I know I'm fucking dragging this out.
No, you're fine.
Love is evil because I wrote it. So I call that my suicide prevention special.
Mm-hmm.
I've had so many people come up to me and go, dude, without that special, I would have killed myself. I was in the middle of a relationship. I have people that buy, actually, the new one we did. If you go to ChristopherTyler.com, you can get it's Love Is You. I did it as a greeting card because people go, some guy bought four of them one night, and I go, what are you buying four? He goes, I got three friends that are going through bad relationships right now. And he goes, and this saved my life. I want to make sure that they don't do something stupid.
That's when
the bonus.
Know.
That's the bonus, man.
That's when you know you're doing something beyond of just – and you're right.
This new special is about my kids wiping their ass, though. So, you know, I just kind of let it go. I just kind of –
Also inspiring.
You know.
It's a big deal at that age.
It's always funny.
And relatable.
There's days I got tiny arms. I can't reach back there. That's inspiring. It happens.
Yeah, but you can toss a drink with your feet.
Yes, I can.
To yourself.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. I do that shit all the time.
Brad and I are sitting at a Lakers game, and this is one of the great things that's just about, like, people in general. Like, you feel like – Brad's one of my best friends. I've known each other for 8 years. I feel like I know him pretty well.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, like, we're sitting there at the game, and he's got his drink down on his feet, and he picks it up with his feet. And I see this out of the corner of my eye, by the way. So I kind of just slowly turn, and then he tosses it to himself and catches it. And I go, I see this for the first time after 8 years, and I just go, what the fuck was that?
That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. That is some Cirque du Soleil
and
stuff,
and
man.
And Cirque de Mige.
Yeah, Cirque de Mige.
And it was fluent and flawless, and he cut, in one motion, caught it, undid the cap, took a swig. I was like, am I in a fucking Gatorade commercial? Like,
speaking of that, Brad Williams available for Gatorade commercials. Do you want one of the coolest commercials that everyone will talk about and go viral instantly?
I mean, sure, Dwayne
Brad
Wade
Williams.
Can throw some ice balls into a hoop, but can he flip a cup up with his hand?
The commercial should be LeBron hitting a game-winning shot, but then that is on the Jumbotron, and everyone's cheering for you, and LeBron's like, what happened?
We're filming that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm okay with that.
Good.
That's great. He's like, he turns around, and
nobody sees the game-winning shot.
You cut to everybody just staring at
the
Jumbotron.
And then Gatorade, and is it
like,
in you?
I'd like...
That's the thing I'm getting, like, now there's a whole, like, internet trend called water bottle flips,
right,
where... kids are like, look, I could flip a water bottle and it can land face up. I'm like, fuck you. Yeah. Do you know what kind of shit I've been doing? Not for fun, but out of necessity?
Because I can't reach.
I've
been flipping water bottles up and grabbing them, having them do full rotations and me catching them perfectly my entire life. And I flipped the water bottle.
Who's the guy that did it? Is it the guy whose story you're telling with the no legs? Because maybe that's back to
that guy too. Yeah, that guy too.
He's like, he's been using my story. I'm going to use his fucking leg flip trick.
He's really good.
Yeah. All right, so this Saturday.
Escondido, Center Theater. It always come to a special taping because that's when it's the best. You know, it has to be good. Because I even schedule a special until it starts getting standing O's. Once it gets standing O's, I schedule it because it's time to move on to the next one.
Whoa.
And here's the sick part. The sick part is I'm looking forward to the horrible nightmare of the next 3 months after we film it. Like, I'm looking forward to writing the new one.
Enjoy that.
You get addicted to it. I was telling you, Brad, that's what I want to tell you. You'll start to get addicted to breaking in new stuff. And it's almost like having too much sex. After you've done so many specials, you've got so many laughs for so long, you're like, I want the weird laughs. I want them, ha-ha, what?
Yeah, what did you want out of this
one? It's like a
weird
fetish. Yeah. I don't know. I just, this one, this special, there's a couple jokes in it, especially the racism bit where, and I started talking about this in Vegas a couple weeks ago. I just said, you know what? I said, I've got to this place where I've done this for so long now. the ha ha ha, I expect I can do that. Mm-hmm. I like when you guys go ha ha ha. Where they laugh and then get scared. I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yes. That was so good.
Like you said,
it's bring out the GIMP. That's what it feels like. That's what it feels like.
Bring out the GIMP. Well, that's the name of your next one.
Yeah.
Chris Titus, bring out the GIMP. So
that's amazing, though, because I was...
And look for Special Unit coming out. Special Unit's coming out. We're actually done with the edit now, and we're doing special effects now. It's going
to
come out.
I want to know real quick, though, how much time did it take you in between the last special and this one to get the hour together? Like, at what point did you go, cool, I've got it? Like, 8 standing O's or...
This one took to write it. Our last one aired May of last year, but I'd started writing it... I started writing it, I think, in November, December.
Okay.
So it's taken me about 18 months, 18, 19 months.
And you don't give a timetable for these? You're just like, I mean, I'm just very curious, like, at what point do you go?
18 months is like the window.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and again, Carlin, like, you know, like, I'm 51 now. Carlin died at 63. So I cranked out. So, you know, I got to fucking start cranking out some specials. But you also, they can't be crap, man. You can't just, you know, crank out another bunch of dick jokes. You got to stop and go, okay, what is this one about?
Do you think people are doing that?
I have to. I just can't. I'm not good at doing. I'm not good at. I'm not proud of every joke in the special, but I'm not like. There's nothing about blowjobs or anal rape or anything like that. Because there's guys that are better. I always say this: if you're doing shit that Red Fox did better in '61, why are you still doing comedy?
Yeah.
You know,
shots fired, Rita Rudner.
I know that's a shot.
I mean, change it up, sweetheart.
We get it.
We get it.
Do not start up the Titus Rudner feud again, man. The Titus Rudner feud was squashed.
There were many casualties.
Yes, it was like the rap battles, man, of the 80s. Come on. The Titus Rudner feud is. You got to let it go, man.
Yeah, my bad.
Go see Christopher Titus live. Listen to the podcast. Watch Special Unit when it comes out. Go back, and if you haven't seen all the DVDs, go get them. Buy 4 of the DVDs for your friends.
Christopher Titus, this was fun, man. Always good hanging with you, but real pleasure,
dude,
man. Real pleasure.
Congrats
on Mad TV. Dude, kick ass.
Thanks, man.
And don't... do you have any fear there, or are you just balls out?
No, I mean, it's so funny that, like, we did a table read last week, and I was just telling my buddy, I was like, it was kind of weird for a minute to be, you know, I've done a lot of table reads and cold reads and whatever, and still a little bit of, like, anxiety or just wanting to be like, all right, fucking lock in and crush this. And I literally sat down and was just like, had none of that. It was just like, yeah, I'm gonna crush this. And I just felt very, it's that thing they say about everything you've done up until some, I guess, big moment. Everything I've done has prepared me for that. So I feel like I'm ready to.
Do you know why you're ready? Because the universe doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah.
There you go, man. Kick ass. Thanks buddy. Buddies.
Thanks.
Show! That's the show! Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.